WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome to another Monday Night Talk. August 6th. Fantastic show lined up. Of course, the Tonight Show being produced by Ben, the benipotent one.
Thank you, Kevin. That's a heck of an introduction.
Is it really?
I loved every second of it.
Oh, good. Okay. Just don't love too much of it. We have a fantastic show tonight, Ben. Ben, did I give you a lineup, by the way?
You gave me a lineup, and it's so incredible my eyes can't look directly at it.
Wow. And you actually did wear hip waders in here tonight.
It's true.
That's impressive because it's going to get deep. We will start things off talking with Elizabeth Cronin. She's the Senior Director of Gaming Policy. This is a big event coming up this week. It's going to be in Cambridge. And it's about getting to know responsible gaming. And this is a panel discussion. And the panel discussion is going to be led by Steve Crosby, the chair of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. He'll moderate the discussion as there'll be industry professionals, problem gaming experts, and many others. So we'll speak with Elizabeth about that. As you know, it is election season, as you've heard many great forums on this radio station. There's many more still to come. I know I was speaking with Christine prior to going on air. We're kind of looking at the lineup for next week. Next week's going to be A very interesting with two particular races. I think we have a state Senate seat that we'll have a couple of candidates in to talk about their race, and also the U.S. Senate race. So we're going to have back-to-back next week. So enjoy this week, because this week we are, well, just the regular program. And the reason why I'm prefacing my next guest with that is because my next guest is a candidate for state representative in the 12th Plymouth District. She's also a Democrat. Kingston Selectman Kathy Lenatra will be joining us at 6:40. Second hour of the program, just as fun as the first hour. Casey Sherman and Dave Wedge. You remember those guys, right? Last time they were in here, they were talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge, the book that they wrote about Pete Frates and his fight to raise money, raise more money than ever had been raised before via the Ice Bucket Challenge. They also wrote the Boston Strong book, and they've written another book. It's called 12. And this is a book in regards to Tom Brady and his redemption in regards to Deflategate. So basically, it's the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. So we'll look to talk with them about that. As well, we have Chris DiIorio. Chris is a good friend. We've had Chris in previously as an attorney. Chris is a great humanitarian. Chris is actually leading a human rights mission to Uganda. Chris is going to kind of come in and talk a little bit about his fundraising efforts and the reason why he's going to spend 6 weeks in that country. So we'll speak with Chris about that. And Chris also has a second reason to be here. He was part of a new documentary that's being put together by Newbie Rateau. And the new documentary is called Protect, Serve, and Care. And I believe that Chris was part of that he's been asked to be have a small part in that, so to speak, whether it's speaking, whether it's legalese or whatever. We'll find out why Chris was asked to be a part of it, and we'll get an idea as to Newby's new film. Newbertson Rattel, of course, someone who has been nominated not only for an Emmy, but he's also won other awards, as he's had a number of films that have appeared in various film festivals, from Las Vegas to California to locally here. Newby has had great success, and he'll be back to talk to us about the new documentary that he has. And Ben, am I getting the high sign here? Are we pulling this thing over into the shoulder? We are. As it's time for us to pull into the WATD Traffic Center, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. And giving us a final report is Lisa DeMilo. Lisa, how are the roadways looking out there?
Leaving the city, the expressway is tough from the tunnel down past South Bay, and you're in it again from Bryan Ave down to the split. Northbound is slow passing Neponset Circle, but you're good approaching the tunnel. 3 South, you're on the brakes passing Union Street. 3 North is good. No problems in the bridges coming on or off Cape. And routes 24 and 44 look good. You can be the difference between a child continuing their dream of education or leaving it behind. Help make the future brighter for one child at unbound.org. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center. Jeffrey, did you remember to pick up some cigars from Brennan's Smoke Shop?
Yep, I stopped by Brennan's, pick up some cigars, and now we're ready to play golf.
Oh, honey, that's a nice drive.
Yep, that's on the green.
That thing was screaming.
Yep, straight as an arrow, right at the green.
Yep, that's a sweet drive, honey.
Yep, that's a nice drive. Yep. Brennan's Smoke Shop. Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, Pope's Island, New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best tee shot in Massachusetts.
Yep.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for our very first segment of the evening. And joining us, we have Elizabeth Cronin, and she is the Senior Director of Gaming Policy. And she is with the American Gaming Association. Give us a little bit of a rundown on this big event taking place in Cambridge this week, August 9th. And Ben, if we check the calendar, let's see how on the ball you are. Is it Thursday? That is Thursday. See, you got a thumbs up. Elizabeth, welcome to the radio show. Yes, Ben, I would make sure you plot that up. Is she still there? We'll try again. Okay. So, as Ben works to try to rectify what the situation is, this is going to be a conversation that's called Get to Know Responsible Gaming. It's a panel discussion. Elizabeth, can you hear me now?
I can. Sorry about that. I was disconnected before. Thank you.
Now, do you have your radio down in the background?
Yep.
Okay.
It's not on.
All right. Are you like on some Bluetooth or something?
Sorry, no, just the office Polycom in our office here.
Oh, very nice. So I will tell you, I got a text message about 25 minutes before the program telling me that Casey Clark would not be joining me, but that I would be getting pretty much an upgrade, and that you are our upgrade to kind of talk to us about this big event that's going to be taking place at the Harvard Faculty Club in Cambridge.
That's correct. This will be taking place this coming Thursday morning. We're very excited about it, and we are going to be recognizing responsible gaming and the industry commitment to that issue.
And this is basically, I know that we're on the cusp of a couple of casinos, one more so in the Boston area, one in the western part of the Commonwealth, that are about to open up. Is that kind of the reason why we're looking to have a conversation like this, and have someone like Stephen Crosby, who is the chair of the MGC, basically moderate the discussion?
That's exactly right. The market is set to expand in the state of Massachusetts. The Penn National's Plain Ridge Park property has been open for a few years, and the MGM Springfield property is scheduled to open later this month, and then next year the Encore Boston property will follow as well. So the state is expected to see some expansion, and you know, we just want to underscore on behalf of the industry that the promotion of responsible play is important. It's something the industry is committed to and invested in, and we want to make sure that we can share that message.
And you're not just some fly-by-night type of a person. You're somebody who you know your business when it comes to policy, reform, and any other compliance that needs to be to take place when it comes to gaming, correct?
Absolutely. That's correct.
What are we expecting for a conversation here? Again, as we know, we've had Plain Ridge. It's been open, and it's seen a moderate amount of success. But that's just slots. That's not necessarily, you know, what we're going to see with these two casinos that are opening up. So we're basically kind of getting everybody ready, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, with the market expanding, I think it's an opportune time to focus on an issue like this that's important. It's a focal point for consumer protection, and, you know, it's really at the heart of the industry. As you mentioned, compliance is critical, and ensuring that everyone that comes into a casino is playing responsibly, setting a budget, you know, sticking to responsible practices. Those types of things we want to be ensuring that we're reminding all patrons of.
And just so folks know that the event itself is part of Responsible Gaming Education Week, which I think we're in the middle of right now, yeah?
Today, exactly. We are kicking this off today at casinos across the country. There's a wide range of events taking place. Operators use it as a chance to kind of refresh employee training and remind employees how important this issue is. But there's a widespread range of recognition to this issue taking place throughout the course of this week. And really, this week is just a chance to kind of spotlight this issue. But throughout the course of the year, the industry is doing a lot in terms of dedicated resources, investment to this issue. A significant amount of employees are trained. We have a code of conduct that establishes consistent practices that are industry-wide as well. And we, in conjunction with this year's Responsible Gaming Education Week, we're updating a new version of that as well to keep that relevant and timely and make sure that that's applicable to you know, sports betting as well, another area that we're seeing expand across the country.
How important is it that the industry takes these type of proactive steps to make sure that, you know, when these two casinos open, that there is success and that they are on top of their game when it comes to game? They're on top of things in regards to making sure that there's no problems, whether it's for the short term or the long term.
Oh, it's critical. You know, the industry operates casinos. They're a form of entertainment. They're a form of leisure. It's, you know, it's very similar to going to see a sporting event or a show at the theater. It's a place to enjoy an entertainment experience and have fun and keep it social with friends or family members. But it's an entertainment experience. You want to keep it responsible. You want to have a budget that you're sticking to. You want to have a, you know, dedicated amount of time that you're going to play when you go. And that's critical for the industry. The industry wants to ensure that everyone is playing responsibly, sticking to their budget, and keeping it safe.
Talk to me about some of the folks who we're expecting for professionals who are going to be in the room, who will be part of the discussion, again, which is going to be moderated by Steve Crosby, who is the chair of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission.
Exactly, yes. We're delighted to have Chairman Crosby serve as the moderator for the event. We'll also be joined by Marlene Warner. She serves as the executive director of the Massachusetts Council on Compulsive Gambling, and she's also the president of the board for the National Council on Problem Gambling. So she'll be participating as well. We will also have Alan Feldman, who is with MGM Resorts, and we will also have Jim Baldacci, an executive from Penn National, will be joining as well, the operator of Plain Ridge Park. And then on behalf of AGA, there will be Sarah Slane participating, and she serves as the SVP of Public Affairs here at the AGA.
Again, and this is going to be this Thursday morning from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. The Harvard Faculty Club 20 Quincy Street in Cambridge, Mass. Doors opening at 9:30. Is this something that's going to be somewhat of an annual practice by the AGA?
This is actually, this week marks the 21st annual Responsible Gaming Education Week. So this has been a longstanding industry practice. We, of course, intend to continue this and look forward to hosting future events. It's a great way to raise awareness of why this issue matters to the industry, what we're doing, the types of investments that we're making, and great opportunity to get our message out.
Is there any particular policy that's going to be discussed that maybe it might entice folks who want to kind of sit in and listen as the industry leaders are bandying it about?
You know, two areas of focus. One is on the updated code of conduct that we have. And again, this guides industry practices across the country. It helps promote responsible gaming measures for employees to embrace. It obviously also impacts local communities, too, with the patrons that come from that area. We're also working on creating new resources and collateral that provide more objective and transparent information for patrons on how casino games operate, what the odds are. So we'll be rolling out some of those tools and resources at this event as well. So just straightforward, you know, very easily to digest and understand information on how casino games operate, the odds that you can expect to experience when you're in the casino playing.
Now, we know that there's not necessarily going to be one down, other than we got Plain Ridge. Like I said, I've already mentioned the other two casinos in Springfield and in Everett, Massachusetts. Knowing that we could maybe one day have one here in the southeastern portion of the state, how would the AGA get involved when it comes to maybe too much of a good thing? As far as, do you guys kind of, or does your organization kind of look and give information to like Stephen Crosby to help that commission when it comes to deciding whether or not, you know, what's too much when it comes to gambling? Or is that more or less you let the states kind of do their own thing?
Yeah, I mean, we're a federal,
right,
you know, advocacy organization, so that isn't an area that really falls within our remit. Where we play a role really is just providing objective information on the economic impact of gaming, you know, the tax revenue that is generated, the number of jobs that an operation is likely to create, you know, the positive economic impact you see on small businesses and in the surrounding community, those types of things. We have research, we have data that we, you know, frequently will provide as this type of consideration takes place, but we are not engaged at that type of state and local level with those types of debates.
I kind of figured, but I didn't want to, you know, when you're on the radio, sometimes folks will send you questions via social media and go, hey, ask this. So I hope, Tim, I hope you're happy that I asked that question, courtesy of our listening audience out there. Is there something I haven't asked you in regards to this fantastic event, but that you want to make sure that we get out to the listeners of 95.9 WATD?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you this evening. I appreciate your interest in this issue, and I just want to underscore that responsible gaming is a critical priority for the industry. It's something we take very seriously. Annually, industry-wide, we're investing approximately $300 million to responsible gaming interests. So it's important, and we're pleased to have a chance to recognize it this week. And thank you for your interest and the great questions.
Again, we're speaking with Elizabeth Cronin. She is the Senior Director of Gaming Policy with the American Gaming Association. If folks want to find out more, whether it's about the event that's coming up this Thursday morning or more about the AGA, how can they do that?
We have information available on our website and then also on the AGA Twitter feed as well.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And probably the one that last question I would ask is, would you be, is this event open to the public? Are there still tickets available? If so.
Sure. There is a registration that has also been shared through AGA's social media channels that we could provide for you as well. But it is out there. It's located on the AGA's Twitter feed.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you so much, and I hope that this event is successful and it's informative for those who attend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
You got it. This is Elizabeth Cronin. She has been our guest from the American Gaming Association. And, yeah, breakfast will be served, Ben. I know that's one of those things that you wanted to ask as a question, and it's true. I don't know what exactly the spread's going to be, but there will be breakfast.
Good okay. breakfast. Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, well, let's do this. Let's step aside for a moment. And when we come back, warming up in the bullpen, our next guest, Kathy Lenatra, Kingston Selectwoman, state rep candidate, right here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance? Good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim. I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock. Excellent.
All right. Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group. I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all. My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Hi, I'm Ed Perry, and I founded WATD 40 years ago. WATD is so proud to partner with Plymouth 400. This is a once-in-a-century opportunity to really get people to come and visit the South Shore of Massachusetts. It isn't just marketing the Plymouth area. It's giving people all over the country the opportunity to be part of a celebration that really makes everyone proud to be an American. And that's why the Plymouth 400 is so important, is that people feel good about this celebration. It's unique. To get all of the benefits that you will get as a business partnering with Plymouth 400, I think this celebration is probably one of the most important things that we will be doing on the South Shore to remember the history of our country and where it came from and where it's going. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back by popular demand. Well, I don't know about that. That's overstating it. But our next guest is currently vice chairman of the Kingston Board of Selectmen. Meet on Tuesday nights. I learned that tonight. And she is a Democratic candidate for state representative, the 12th Plymouth District, Kathy Lenatra.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. For those who don't know about you, who are you?
Let me tell you a little bit about myself. Like you said, my name is Kathy Lenatra, and I'm running for state representative in the 12th Plymouth District. That district consists of Precinct 1 in Duxbury, all of Halifax, all of Kingston, Precinct 1 in Middleborough, Precinct 1, 11 and 13 in Plymouth, and all of Plimpton. Almost messed that up there.
Really?
Yes.
All 10,000 people in Plimpton?
Plimpton's a beautiful town.
Probably one of the favorite questions that is asked, especially about that particular district, is while you have the same amount of constituents, they're kind of a little bit more spread out.
They are spread out.
Are you ready for that? I mean, are you ready for that travel? Are we going to have to be bouncing all over the place?
I'm traveling that now. I'm walking door to door in each town. I'm meeting the residents of each town. I'm doing meet and greets in people's living rooms. I'm at community events. So I'm doing that now. And it's a great experience.
Whatever made you say, I want to be a state rep? What made you decide, throw my hat in the ring and I'm doing it?
Well, as you said, right now I'm the vice chair of the Kingston Board of Selectmen, and I'm also a trustee in the Affordable Housing Trust. Prior to that, I was a rec commissioner for 8.5 years. I was on the CPC. I coached for many, many years, all different sports. And, you know, serving on that board and all those community roles, they've taught me that I really want to make a difference, and you need to get involved. You need public service is important to me. So I want to keep our district a great place to live and raise a family and work.
You kind of got like a distinct advantage, though. When I look at the folks who have decided to run for this seat, I mean, you get to sit with a guy who, you know, held this position for many years. And he did it well, and he left on his own terms. What was he left? He decided to go, you know, to move on from being a state rep.
He decided to move on.
But now you kind of, I'm like, he's right there.
He's
like,
right there. He's actually right there.
So, Tom, tell me. What was it like? Yeah, I mean.
I actually sit right next to Tom at meetings, the Board of Selectmen meetings. It has been a benefit. If I do have a question and it's off business hours, then I'll ask him. I also have some great other mentors, Josh Cutler, right there in Duxbury, Tom O'Brien, Therese Murray. So I have a wide variety of people I can go to with questions, and they've all been very supportive and very helpful.
You mentioned Josh. It's funny because I was watching. He is currently traveling.
He is North Dakota, I believe.
South
Dakota.
Ooh. Dakota. And
sorry.
Many, many moon ago, I lived out in South Dakota for some strange reason for like a year and a half.
Well, it looks beautiful from the pictures he's posted.
But that's the thing. It's a great place to visit. You just don't want to live there. And he's having a great time.
He is having a great time.
With the fam as they're visiting. I actually sent him a text message last night. And I'm like, he was one of Wall, South Dakota. Now, you're like, oh, Wall, what the hell was that? Anybody who has traveled via vehicle, up and down Route 90, up and down 29 from Iowa up to South Dakota, there is from starting in Chicago all the way to our signs that you need to stop at Wall Drug.
Wall Drug.
Wall Drug. And there's actually, and it's... It started out way, way back when, and I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but you mentioned Josh Cutler, which is kind of it spurred me to kind of just tell a little bit of a story. If you look in the Rand McNally, the map book, you will see Wall Drug.
I will have to do that.
There are all these. The idea was where it's this little itty bitty town. Mm-hmm. How do we draw people to our community? How do we get them to our store? And so they would have all these kooky signs. Free ice water. That was one of them. Free ice water. Come see, they have like a dinosaur. It's like this. They get all kinds of kooky things to drag you, to have you like, oh, stop on by. I'm not kidding you. If you ever get a chance to take a road trip, they're everywhere. And ask Josh.
I will ask Josh when he returns.
So it's definitely very interesting. So what have you learned from a Josh Cutler? What have you learned from... in regards to what you're going to need to do if you're elected in November?
Well, a lot of things I've learned is what I've also done as Board of Selectmen is listening to the constituents. You really need to listen to what people's concerns are, and where this district is so vast, there's different concerns in each community. So you need to listen, and listen with an open mind and with no preconceived notions, and from there try to assist them in helping with their issues.
You're already kind of immersed in the campaign. How different is this campaign compared to the campaign that was successful, obviously, for you to become a select woman?
This is a much larger campaign. As we mentioned, the district's a much larger area to cover, knocking door to door, which I do 5 days a week, so you may see me soon. It's really getting out there. This is more of a full-time job for me, this campaign. I'm out there. You're trying to hit every community event that you can think of to meet more people and hear their concerns. Knock on doors.
What are people saying to you?
Meet and greets. Well, there's lots of things they're saying to me. You know, one of our greatest public health care crises we face is the opioid epidemic. You know, at its core, the epidemic is about our neighbors. It's about our communities and our families. So I'm hearing that a lot across the board.
What else? Well, I mean, other than the opioids, what are you hearing from your district? I mean, and how does it differ? Does it differ in different parts of the district, or is
it? Well, there's different concerns. If I'm in Halifax, they're concerned about Mont Ponsett Pond.
Ooh. Why?
Well, you know, the algae. They have the algae. They want to combat that toxic algae in Mont Ponsett Pond. But, you know, there have been some things have been done. Last year, Brockton had signed the administrative consent order. And what I would do is make sure that's enforced and those regulations, the water manager practices it's going to be one of my top priorities to make sure that that's enforced. So, you know, this year it's been a pretty good year for them.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because that was earlier this year with the help of the newsroom and many of the folks in the community, I was able to co-produce a series on Silver Lake, which sits right in the heart.
It does, right in the heart of the district.
And Tom Coulter, at least for the past couple of years, has tried to lead the fight to make sure that, and not necessarily try to wrestle the water rights away from the city of Brockton, but just make sure that Brockton is responsible when it comes to. How are you going to at least try to be a voice when it comes to Silver Lake and how it's taken care of, especially where it's in the heart?
It is in the heart. And that's something I would follow Tom Coulter's lead on. And I would ask for his expertise. And I would hold Brockton accountable and make sure that that is enforced.
Now, you've already said that how you're active in the community. You actually said you actually coach sports. What sports?
Oh, my goodness. I started the first sport that children can play. I have four children, ranging in ages from 24 to 11. So the first sport they could all play, I know, is soccer.
Oh, yeah.
So we started with soccer. You just need a ball. You need a ball and two little nets. You start with two little nets. So I started with that. I was the coordinator for Boys U12 for many years. I was a Brownie Troop leader. That was interesting. I've coached softball. Yeah, I still play softball, actually, too. I'm a softball player.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
At this age.
So it's like I've met the counter to Bob Hedlund. You know, Weymouth Mayor, former state senator, who's a baseball and softball guy.
Yeah, I'm not a baseball girl. I'm just a softball girl.
Softball girl. What's your position?
I pitch.
Really?
Yes. Pitch and second base.
Ooh. Now, were you a pitcher in high school or college?
I was, yes.
That's an art form.
Yes, it is an art form, but it's not windmill anymore. We don't have the shoulders for windmill anymore. We're more of the slow pitch gals now.
A little bit of an arc, 6
a
to 12
bit of
arc.
An arc? Yes.
I have to keep you in mind because I actually participate in a couple of different softball tournaments.
Oh, love a softball tournament.
And we got one of them is a co-ed.
Oh, great. Keep me in mind.
Hey, remember that when I told you there, Kathy? We could use a pitcher.
We have a big fundraiser in Kingston, the Kingston Youth Sports Organization. It's called the Cold Turkey, and that's in November. And it's where, oh gosh, there must be at least 20 teams that play. And sometimes it's -2 degrees, sometimes it's 60 degrees. And it's an all-day tournament. Great turnout.
Talk to me about, let's say you are elected on November 6th. How do you take office? What's your plan of attack? Again, you're somebody who is, and this is, I think I'm asking a Charles Matheson question here, as he poses to various candidates. As somebody who, your first term, you're still getting your feet underneath you. They kind of stick you in an area with, I'm sure Josh, I mean, we actually did, myself, got video footage of Josh when he was kind of with, you know, 8 or 9 other representatives until they find them. They sort you out and put you into
a nice office,
or something decent.
Yes.
What do you do to get things done to be able to file legislation or, you know, get acclimated and work with other legislators in your district and in the area?
Well, fortunate enough, I've been out there and I've met legislators in my district and I've become friendly with them. I have them as mentors. We have a little bit of a training. I believe it's only a 5-day training. Mm. I realize my office will probably be a closet in the basement to begin with. Hopefully, I will be able to retain the aid that Tom Coulter has, and that will be a big benefit to me as well. I will step back from I'm a realtor. I'll step back from that. I've developed a team that will help me with that. As my selectman role, I will keep that position until April, which is our next town election. And then not to leave an open seat or incur a special election to the town.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably cost the town one anywhere between $10,000 and $15,000.
Probably. So let's not do that.
Let's not. And you don't mind being
I do not. Okay. I enjoy
but that's
it.
Almost like a full-time job, being a select person.
I wouldn't say it's a full-time job, no? But it's close. It's close.
Okay.
Rewarding, so, though. Very rewarding.
What committees would you set? Would you like to, would you favor that you'd like to serve on?
I would love to be involved with affordable housing. Would love to be involved with affordable housing.
Really?
Yes.
40B girl?
Well, no, I would like to get our affordable housing up over 10% so we wouldn't have to
but
have
40B. But that's what I'm saying. Is it somebody who, yes. Okay, all right.
So that, I would love to see my district for each town to get up over 10% of affordable housing.
Do you foresee any kind of legislation, whether it's for smart growth, or do you think that's something that should be every community is some, goes
well,
about
community
setting
should
that up?
Have a master plan.
Right.
So each community has its own master plan, and then we'll work from there. And what are their needs? Is it workforce housing? Is it housing for seniors? Is it housing for our young people?
What do you stand on taxes?
That's a big concern.
That's a big concern. But again, some people, you know how people are. Especially if you see on social media, depending on where your allegiance is now, where you're kind of a select person, a select woman,
mm-hmm.
right? There's not a D and an R, right?
No, there isn't.
No, there
no,
isn't.
There
but,
isn't.
But you're gonna, you know, again, now you're a Democrat, and
how do I feel about
how do you,
taxes?
Yeah, how do you well, go? About, how do you feel about
I,
taxes? How do
honestly,
you feel about?
I live in the community as well, and I do not like to see my property taxes go up. So that's where I would like to really get into economic growth. You know, to help the town, to help with infrastructure, to help with the funding for our schools, to keep, to stabilize our property taxes that seem to keep going up and up. Mm. But now if we can get some good economic growth in there, in our towns, we can stabilize that. And I'd like to see that. I'd like to work on that.
What are some of the things in some of the communities that are in the district, some of the things that you've enjoyed learning about to be a well-rounded candidate? So when you're asked questions, what are you going to do for me if you go up there? What do you know about Plimpton? What do you know about Halifax? What have you done to kind of get to understand each community?
To understand each community, it's speaking to the residents of the community. In Plymouth and in Duxbury, we're concerned about the Pilgrim Power Plant, which we all should be. Mm. We all should be. You know,
well,
it
goes offline next year.
It goes offline, but we want to make sure those emergency funds still come in until it's shuttered. We want those emergency funds. Mm. So those are important things to my district. Those most importantly to Plymouth and to Duxbury. They're right there. And to Kingston. I can see, you know, we're all right in that same community. Halifax, I mentioned, we have Montponset Pond. You know, we have the, we want to keep that toxic algae away.
Cyanobacteria.
Yes, we want to keep that gone.
blue-green algae. What else do I want to ask you?
Can I tell you about some upcoming events?
You know, what we probably should do is at least take a moment to talk a little bit about a special event happening tomorrow night.
Yes.
In the town of Kingston.
In the town of Kingston. We have once a year, it's called National Night Out, and it's put on by the Kingston Police Department as well as all the first responders in our fire department. And that is tomorrow night at the Silver Lake Regional Middle School. It's always the first Tuesday in August every year. It's from 4:30 to 7:30. There will be a canine demonstration at 5:30, and it's free for all ages. There'll be barbecue fare. They have hamburgers that are donated and hot dogs and chips and soda and water. There'll be face painting, jumpy houses. I believe we had those last year. I'm not sure if we have those this year, but we do have face painting and games. It is a great, great event. There'll be a med flight there, helicopters, bomb squads, you name it, it'll be there. Great, great community event for the entire community.
Is there a particular part of the event that you like? It sounds as though you're somebody who's probably, you probably bounce all over the place from one event to another. Is there one that intrigues you more than any?
Well, I will say I am partial to this one because my husband, Michael, is a police officer in Kingston, and we have a canine dog. So he, this will be his first demonstration. Our
dog's
dog,
name?
Oliver, well, this dog's name is Valet. Our dog, Oliver, retired last year.
Oh.
So, but no, Oliver's home with me, and he's enjoying his retirement life.
Kind of a dog?
He's a shepherd. Oliver's a shepherd, and Valet is a half shepherd, half Malamar, and excuse if I'm not pronouncing that correctly to all our dog lovers. But it's a great event. You do not want to miss it. The kids love it, as well as the adults.
So you should have mentioned that earlier, that you also have a dog.
I have three dogs. We have three dogs.
Three dogs?
I have three dogs.
Oh my God, we have one dog, and I think he's a handful.
Yeah.
What do you got? So other than the shepherd?
the shepherd, we have Ballet, who's the shepherd Malamar mix, and then I have Bella, who's a Lassapoo. And she's the worst. She's the freshest.
What?
A Lassapoo, half Lassapoo and half poodle. Loves to chew shoes.
Chew shoes and bark.
She is a barker. She is a barker, yes. Yes.
Okay. If folks want to find out more about this event, is it on the Kingston, the
town
of Kingston website?
It should be on the town website. Yep, it's National Night Out. You can look at them. It's all over Facebook.
Why is this an important, why do you feel this is an important event for the
well,
community?
You know, it really,
and communities that hold it.
The communities that hold it, it brings the whole community out. You get to meet all your first responders, your police officers, your firefighters. You can thank them for all that they do. If you're intimidated by them, your children are intimidated, they get to meet them. They have a face with the name. They're not afraid to go up and ask them questions if they're in trouble. I think it's just a wonderful event to see. It brings the community together and to see what our first responders actually do. And they get to show everybody, which is exciting for them as well.
Anything that I haven't asked you, whether it's about the National Night Out for the town of Kingston or about you as a candidate for state representative?
Well, there are a couple things. I have so much I could... How much time do I have, Kevin?
Yeah, a couple minutes.
I have a couple minutes.
A couple minutes.
So,
but just make sure you take a breath of air every now and then.
I will take a breath. Okay. I will take a breath. I can tell you some ways to reach me. So let me tell you some ways to reach me if you do have questions where we didn't have a lot of time here. But on Facebook, you can reach me at Elect Kathy Lenatra. My website is kathylenatra.com. Or you can email me at elect@kathylenatra.com. I do have some events coming up, too. Some free events, a meet and greet at the Jones River Landing, and that is August 30th from 5:30 to 8.
Okay.
That's 55 Landing Road in Kingston, and that's a free event with barbecue, fair, and games.
Mm.
And then on September 8th, that will be the first anniversary of my 50th birthday. Oh, I hate to say that, but this is the first anniversary of my 50th birthday. That's at Montponset Inn. It's a fundraiser from 6 to 10. And
turning the page, folks.
I'm turning the page. But as your state rep, I want you to know that I will work across the aisle to share those ideas and collaborate and find bipartisan approaches to address the complex issues we face. And I'm looking forward to meeting you if I haven't met you already.
There she is, Kathy Lenatra, state representative, Democrat. She should do well September 4th during the state primary. And looks as though at this time she should be on the ballot for
November 6th.
November 6th.
Please get out and vote. It's very important that your voice is heard and that you get out and vote.
Oh my God, you sounded just like Christine James.
Oh.
Exactly what mentor. She says at the end of one of our forums, and that's at the end of our time here.
Great.
I want to thank you so much for coming in, and we'll look forward to more conversations.
That sounds great.
Whether
thank
it's
you.
As a select woman or as a state rep.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate the time.
You got it. All right. So, Ben, let's take it to take it out. And when we come back, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, anybody who's listening right now, second hour of Monday Night Talk is coming up. Stay tuned.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WMEX Boston, and 95.9 WATD.com.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. My boys do a good job. Here's why. When they were kids, every summer we'd go to the automotive graveyard and take cars apart. Windshields, transmissions, generators. Then comes the fun part, putting it all back together. It was summer camp at the junkyard, and it worked. They're good boys. You can trust them.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right. We are back. Second hour, as I promised. As you are listening to Monday Night Talk 959WATD. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do the 1530 WME.
We won't work with that. We are simulcasting.
Are we really?
AM, FM, that's right. 1510 WMEX.
Very nice. All right. So we're getting out our next guest. And I think actually it's going to be guests because we're anticipating.
We are anticipating right now.
We're anticipating his partner in crime for this project. And I was actually teasing, the voice you just heard is good friend Casey Sherman, who is here in studio. And I was teasing him because I told him that I'm a little upset at him that they've released this book prematurely because I'm still in the middle of Above and Beyond.
Right.
Which is a fantastic book. I'm chapter 15. And not only am I a reader, but I'm also, when I can't read, I'm doing something. It's great. I got the audiobooks. I get Audible.
So that's a book about the Cuban Missile Crisis that I released in April, and now here we are. It's August. It's football season or preseason, and now we're here with 12. The
story of Tom Brady's fight
crazy.
For redemption, and it's already bestseller.
It's already the number one selling sports book in America, which is really amazing.
You know, and I was kind of correlating this last night to myself. I'm like, this is almost like somebody who is like a John Bon Jovi who's a rock star, and then he does like a certain song, and it's got like a country twang to it. It's like a crossover. It's like
the only time I will ever be compared to John Bon Jovi. Thank you, Kevin, for making that comparison. Yeah, no, it's
can't
a crossover.
Go home, because that was a crossover song for country. It was You Can't Go Home.
Right, right. What drew me and what drew my partner in crime, as you mentioned, Dave Wedge, to the project, obviously we're observers of everything that happens with regard to the New England Patriots, and watching what Tom Brady went through during Deflategate and ultimately culminating in the come-from-behind win in the Super Bowl against the Atlanta Falcons, that to us just spoke drama. And we were willing to dip our toe in the water to see if there was a real story there beyond the headlines that we read every day. And sure enough, there's an incredible story here that we had the very great opportunity and fortune to write in 12.
Without tipping your hand too much here, because again, we want people to go out and buy this product.
They
won't go out whether I don't know where you stand in regards to whether you're a hard copy, paperback, Kindle.
As long as they get it, I don't care how you absorb that information or read the book and enjoy the book, then it's all good for us.
Now, is this technically a trilogy for you and Dave? This is the third book?
Yeah, the third. It is. So Dave and I, our first project together was Boston Strong was later adapted into the movie Patriots Day. Mark Wahlberg. Then we, partnered up again for the Ice Bucket Challenge last year. Pete Frades, which is now being developed into a major motion picture with Netflix. We've already got our lead actor. We can't announce him yet, but it's coming very soon. And we were looking for another project to work on together. Dave and I are like brothers. We really are, on the page and behind the scenes, we support each other tremendously. He's a great friend of mine, and his family is like my family. And we were looking at a potential other project, and we started to think about when Deflategate happened to do a book about the dark side of the NFL. All the gates, meaning Bounty Gate, Deflate Gate, Spy Gate. And we thought, okay, there's enough narrative there that would make for a national book. And then, of course, Deflategate happens, and we're observing Tom Brady go through this drama. And then we see it culminate on the field in the Super Bowl against the Falcons. And while the confetti is dropping down on Tom Brady's head, Dave and I, call each other and we say, okay, this is the ending to our story. This is a great story here. And simultaneously, we get another call, and it's our Hollywood screenwriting partner, Paul Tamasi, who we worked on with The Finest Hours, with Patriots Day. And he says to us, guys, I'm not even a Patriots fan, but this is an epic story that needs to be told. You write the book. We'll make the movie together, and the rest is history.
What was it like to put this book together? I mean, because there are several storylines, there are subplots.
Sure.
A lot of people involved. What was it like to gather information to put this together to tell the story?
Well, we had unprecedented access to the Patriots. You know, for the first time in history, Tom Brady went on the record with an author of a book that he didn't write. You know, there's no avocado ice cream recipe in this story. There's no well-being. You know, we're not TB12-ing it here. We're telling the story about Deflategate, and I think he wanted it on the historical record, which is why he cooperated with the book. We spent time with the Crafts. We spent time with many of the Patriots players that that were heavily involved in the comeback from behind victory. So when you read the end of the book, we literally put you into the huddle with not only the offensive players but the defensive players to show you play by play what they were dealing with, the struggles and the triumphs, every single play until they culminated with what we saw on the screen.
It's interesting that you say that. And again, I think the secret sauce was the comeback.
Exactly.
The comeback. I mean, because that, I mean, if they ended up losing 50-3, then it'd be like, oh, no.
It would be a footnote to sports history. Instead, it's one of the transcendent performances of all time. And people don't, you know, remember now that the Super Bowl itself is a tale of two halves. The first half, the Atlanta Falcons are absolutely dominant. They're faster. They're stronger. They're making better decisions. Tom Brady seems unaware of his opponent, throwing bad throws, and one culminated into an interception, you know, ran back for a touchdown. And Tom Brady makes this pathetic attempt to dive at the player's legs and flounders on the field. And I don't know about you, Kevin. I was looking at it saying, okay, this is
front
TB12, front page. Growing old before our eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you for the memories, Tom. But, you know, there's a new era and you're not a part of it. Little did we know what was going on in his mind at the time and his teammates.
What's that like, though, to be able to kind of, I mean, you look at this franchise. And I remember growing up watching this franchise.
So did I.
and it's incredible from back in the early days, the Jack Tatum days, Daryl Stingley.
Daryl Stingley.
Yeah, I mean,
Russ Francis.
Francis, you know, Squish
Grogan,
the Fish.
Tony Eason.
The Rod Rust year.
Rod Rust, you know, 1-15.
Are we gonna move to Connecticut? Are we going to St.
Right,
Louis?
Right, all those options were on the table. And we tell that story within the pages of 12. We give you a brief history of the Patriots franchise and also a history of Tom Brady, the player, because they're comparable. They're afterthoughts. Thoughts that willed themselves into a winning formula. Brady as a quarterback, the Patriots as a franchise.
You guys have been, it's been whirlwind as far as the media stuff that you've been doing. I mean, you're here in Patriots country, so it's kind of, I'm sure it's a hug everywhere, but if you've been doing stuff outside of the area, what's it like? I mean, what's the feedback?
You know, Parade Magazine did an excerpt of the book. We've been on ESPN countless times. Everywhere, Dave and I have been nonstop since last Tuesday, and what people are drawing from the book is, you know, Brady is an athlete on the level of Michael Jordan, on the level of Muhammad Ali. So obviously there's awareness and interest anywhere you go around the country. And what other interviews and people are drawing from the book is this tale of deceit and betrayal. The book really unfolds like a John Grisham thriller because we tell the story of that other entity, meaning the NFL and Roger Goodell. And what we found about him was truly fascinating.
Really? Wow. I'm intrigued. I'm very much intrigued. I mean, just from leaving that ending sentence that you just said, what was it like when you did, again, without tipping your hand, showing any cards, some of the information that you, again, come on now. We'll give a round of applause to Mr. Dave Wedge, who made it into the building. Dave?
How are you?
The Brockton guy in the building? Thank you. Round of applause.
It's amazing the studio audience you have here, Kevin, in this very small studio.
It came alive the moment Dave walked in the room.
Yeah, didn't happen when I walked in, but that's all right.
Actually, had the wrong button. Let's just a little bit more, because I didn't give Dave. There we go. Can you hear it okay now? I don't know if you've had a chance to listen at all car.
Yeah. Good to see you, Kevin. Thank you.
Good to see you. How's the fam?
Were you at Citi Field yesterday?
I was.
Fantastic.
Dude, it was awesome.
What a pro. Traveling the country, back here in Marshfield.
I'm no Dave Wedge, I'm no Casey Sherman. I wouldn't go that far.
We both came down here tonight. I just heard you talk about the whirlwind of the media and all that, and it has been, but we wanted to make sure we made time for you, Kevin, because you've been a big supporter of ours from day one, and we really appreciate that. We're loyal guys, you know, Brockton guy, Hyannis guy, so we really appreciate all you've done and all your listeners. So.
But again, you guys are slowly drifting up to the stratosphere.
We're working hard, man.
But the product that you guys put on the shelf, I mean, and I was teasing Casey earlier on that, you know, I'm still enthralled in his Above and Beyond at this particular time. So I'm like, oh, yeah. How am I going to squeeze this in?
You know, Dave and I are like possums. We sleep for 2 hours a night hanging on the, upside down on a branch. And then the rest of the time we're writing. And that's what the audience, I think, hopefully will appreciate that. You know, we do get out, every couple of months we talk to you and others. But the majority of the time is working. We're biting the nail, as Hemingway used to say, from 5 a.m. till whenever we quit every day. And it's all about dedication and discipline when you're a writer. If you want to be prolific, as I think we are now, it's putting the work in, you know, every day.
Yeah, yeah. I think a good friend of mine, Kerry J. Byrne, called you guys prolific.
Yeah, no, Kerry's another one.
You guys were hanging out with him not too long ago.
One of my good pals from BC, Quincy guy. He did a great book with Jay Hodge. Did you have Kerry on to talk about that one?
Not yet.
You should have him come in. He did a great book about Jay Hodge. He's a chef. He owns Mike City Diner and some other place. And anyway, but yeah, no, Casey and I, we're fortunate that we've had some great stories to tell. You know, the marathon bombing, unfortunately, was something that, you know, happened to Boston, and clearly there was no topic that any of us in this room felt more passionately about. So it was an honor to tell that. And then, you know, the Fradys won. Again, great people, great story. And, you know, we were going to take a break, but I heard Casey explain what happened. You know, we were thinking about the dark side of the NFL, all that, and the Super Bowl happened. And then we were like, you know what? This is a perfect way for us to kind of get away from the more heavy subject matter and do something a little lighter, but also something that we're very passionate about and means a lot to, you know, Boston and the people here. And, you know, we're Boston guys. We want to tell those stories.
And I was going to say, and again, it is a change of pace from the first two books you guys worked on together.
It is.
Sure, but you've got the common themes where, you know, you're talking about the Boston Marathon bombing and, you know, a lot of the corruption and the deceit and the betrayal behind the scenes that Dave and I were able to uncover. We saw the same thing to a lesser degree with the NFL and the New England Patriots. Roger Goodell, the character that I described, was incredibly fascinating to us. He's this very Nixonian figure, which to us was interesting because we write about Roger Goodell's background. He was the son of Charles Goodell, a U.S. senator from New York, who only got the seat after Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. So he was given the seat by Nelson Rockefeller. He's a moderate Republican. They have to appease Bobby's base, so they put this moderate in. They didn't know how moderate he was. Next thing you know, Charles Goodell is marching with Coretta Scott King. He's a very vocal opponent against the war. And Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew absolutely derailed Charles Goodell's political career and knocked him out of contention for re-election or election in a proper way the first time he ran for ballot. Now, Charles Goodell and Roger had a very difficult relationship. Charles Goodell was often cold and distant to his son. So Roger was always looking for that father figure. And the only job he'd ever had, Kevin, in his life was with the NFL. That's the only job that he ever applied for after high school or after college, rather. And he's been there ever since, constantly yearning for, you know, approval and a father figure. Here comes Robert Kraft. He's just bought the Patriots. He's looking to groom somebody in the inside that would give him more influence as he became a coach or became an owner. Exactly. Right. So they have this beautiful, you know, father-son relationship. And suddenly Spygate happens in 2007, where the Patriots are accused and caught illegally taping, videotaping signals from opposing teams. Now, that's a legitimate sports controversy. Belichick was caught red-handed, and the rest of the ownership of the NFL was looking at that case and wondering how the Patriots would be punished. And they, quite frankly, were not punished to the degree that they should have been. Roger Goodell was even accused of destroying videotaped evidence that could have implicated the team even further. So the rest of the owners looked at this relationship, saw collusion, and I use that word very purposely, collusion between Goodell and Kraft, and they told Goodell, you know, in no uncertain terms, if this happens again, if the Patriots are accused of anything, you have to grab that team by the throat and not let go. And that's exactly what Goodell did. And now the story has Shakespearean elements too, because Kraft has to make a decision. In order to retain the power that the other NFL owners have given him, he's got to metaphorically slay his father. And that's exactly what he does with Robert Kraft.
It's interesting, folks, if you, whether you realize it or not, and again, somebody who has read what these gentlemen have done, whether it's individually or as a unit, as Casey was kind of giving you some of the background, if you read any of their stories, you listen to any of their stories, that's what you kind of get. You get kind of some in-depth look at the situation, not just the stuff you hear on sports radio, where you're hearing a lot of people who are giving you what they think might be happening, or maybe a secondary or third source, you know, hearsay. You're hearing guys who actually have done some good reporting, who have actually talked to people and been behind the scenes to be able to craft a story here.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think that's what Casey and I do, is we tell great stories.
It's fantastic.
And, you know, this book, you know, there's some people that have done some phenomenal investigative work on Deflategate, on the Patriots. There's been a lot of books written about the Patriots. There'll be a lot more written about the Patriots, about this era that of, you know, unprecedented success that we're experiencing. But I think what Casey and I did here was we said, you know, Deflategate to the end of that Falcons Super Bowl is a really key,
it's huge,
key part of this franchise's history, and it's a story that's dying to be told, and that's the story we told, is the story of that era. Casey doesn't really love this analogy, but I like to equate it to the movie Ali, which I loved, which is basically just that 1 year period of Rumble in the Jungle with Muhammad Ali, when he went through that whole drama with, you know, dodging the draft or refusing to go into the draft,
right,
and all that. And, you know, this is kind of similar. I think when Tom Brady one day goes into the Hall of Fame and gets that yellow jacket out there in Canton, Ohio, he's going to look back on 2016, 17, Deflategate to that Falcon Super Bowl is really the moment of his career, I think.
Good.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I do think that Brady to Ali is a very strong, you know, comparison, because both were aging athletes and both were looked at as possibly having no particular chance against their opponent at the time. But I will say that Dave and I aren't writing a history book right now. We're writing about, you know, what's happening today in Foxborough, all of the fractured relationships that we are seeing within Fortress Foxborough between Belichick and Brady, Belichick and Kraft. We write about the origin story of that in 12. So we're telling the readers, explaining this is why it happened, this is how it happened, and only the future is going to tell where it ends up from here.
It's interesting you say that, because anybody who's listened to talk radio since the end of the Super Bowl and what's happened, I mean, everybody saw the Tom versus Time, mm-hmm, and like, oh my God, this is the first time that we're seeing Tom. You know, he's being vocal and he's doing something. Normally it's usually, you know, he's a team guy.
Yeah, he's the ultimate company man, and he's not anymore.
Right.
I think he has been his entire career, but I think in the past year and a half, you've seen him come out of his shell and do his own thing. And, you know, I think, you know, Tom Brady has always done things the Patriot way. And I think when this whole situation happened with Deflategate, he was thrown under the bus by Belichick in that famous press conference where Belichick said, go ask Tom. And then he didn't get the support of Bob Kraft when Bob Kraft abandoned the appeal suddenly.
Right.
Didn't tell Tom it was coming. Tom learned about it in the press conference like everybody else. And Brady was left there on an island. But guess what? Who was there to help him? The union. And Tom Brady was always there for the union. So when he needed the union, they were there for him.
So we have, you know, we tell the unsung story of these litigators, these unsung legal heroes that were protecting Tom Brady's blind side in the courtroom and in the boardroom. And those are the stories that I think the reader, you know, readers don't know, and we uncover them in the book. There's a bunch of great characters that we really follow. We were embedded with the NFLPA for quite some time, getting their stories on the record and seeing the different strategies and tactics unfold and the opposing forces that were all, you know, pleading for Tom's attention, whether it's Don Yee, his agent, or the ownership of the New England Patriots, or the NFLPA itself. You look at, you know, I say that it took the Beatles 8 years to break up. You know, the New England Patriots have been together as a unit for 18 years, and that's the trinity of Belichick, Kraft, and Brady. It's been a long time, and they've done it more successfully than any other team in sports, modern day or yesteryear. So to see the relationships begin to fracture a little bit is very telling. You know, we don't know if this is the end of an era or if they've got, you know, a few more Super Bowl runs in them.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because you look at how many times this quarterback coach tandem have been to not only playoffs but to the Super Bowl.
Eight of them.
Who can claim that? Nobody.
It's as I said,
their records that'll never be broken.
Sure.
Well, they may be.
They may be, but it might not be in our lifetime.
Well, no one that we see playing now, certainly.
Right. You know? Certainly not Jimmy G.
Well, you talk about Jimmy G, so, you know, we write about him in the book in a way that Dave mentioned that, you know, Bob Kraft had to give up his legal fight against the NFL and makes a public announcement that he was doing so, didn't tell Tom. Tom feels betrayed. He feels shocked about it. And Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft, Dave and I spent a lot of time with them working on the book. We spent, you know, a few hours with them just, you know, completely focused on this particular story. And Dave and I saw a tremendous love between the Krafts and Brady. It was really much more so than a manager or an owner would have with any particular player. So Kraft felt like he needed to make amends with Brady. He felt awful for making the decision, but he did so because he didn't want to be an Al Davis type of character. Sue the NFL as an owner. You're on the outside looking in. You're not a part of this Illuminati, you know, ownership group anymore. So he understood that and had to benefit his team moving forward. But then fast forward to last season, and he makes Belichick send Garoppolo packing to San Francisco for a second round pick, and that was the ultimate olive branch to Tom.
Al Davis brings you right back to Brockton, Massachusetts.
That's right. That's right. A good Brockton guy.
Another
that's
Brockton guy.
Yeah, he is.
Sorry.
I wouldn't say good Brockton.
I was going to say, yeah. And I would say another Brockton guy.
Yeah. A Brockton guy. If I may, this is something that I actually pulled off of Amazon. This was a review just from a couple of days ago. It's a Kindle edition. This is a well-written and well-researched book that explores the motivations of Brady. Over the past few years, the authors do a great job of moving linearly through the timeline, but providing background on individuals as they are introduced into the events. It was particularly fascinating to read about Deflategate, the conflicting guidance provided to Brady during the investigation, and what drove Goodell and the NFL. Pretty interesting, huh?
Well, we want to, you know, we wrote a book for your average fan, or maybe somebody that wouldn't even read.
I think it's beyond an average fan.
Yeah, I would say.
I think it's beyond an average fan.
Well, I appreciate that, and Dave does as well. Somebody that maybe had never heard of the Patriots before, but can pick up a story that unfolds like a John Grisham thriller. And that's really, I think, how Dave and I attacked this particular story. And, you know, so far, so good. Both the critical acclaim and the public reviews have been fantastic. You know, we just let the chips fall where they may, and we'll see how it all goes.
And I think, you know, it's good for guys like Casey and I to jump in on a story like this, because, you know, all the guys, the beat writers and all that, they're going to dig out all the football stuff and tell a lot of these stories, but we have a different perspective than them, and we're telling the story in a very different way than the sports writers are going to tell it. And, you know, I think that's a good thing, you know, and it's, you know, it's not unlike, you know, when we did the marathon story, you know, Casey and I We've been journalists for 20 years, but you know, we bring a different perspective than other people that experience that.
And I was going to say that is both of you are journalists, and you both had that investigative background that really, you know, really helps the product that you put out.
You know, we both worked.
You're not just a couple of schmoes.
Yeah, no, we worked in newsrooms for
sometimes we were
20 years each, and you know that's what allows us the experience and the perspective to be able to tell these stories the way that we do.
How are your families receiving this? I know you got a couple of daughters, Casey. You got a grown daughter, and Jackson's growing like a weed. What's it like with your families?
I mean, I think our families are very helpful in terms of allowing us to balance what we do. You know, Dave and I are constantly, you know, the first thing in the morning isn't, hey, what interview do we have today? It's, well, I've got to drop my daughter off here, he's going to drop his son off there, and we make it work. And that is, I think, a testament to the people that love us, who allow us to do what we do. And you know, first and foremost, our families, our daughters, our wives, our girlfriends.
Indeed.
You know, they've been incredibly supportive and gracious to us, so you know, we wouldn't be anywhere without their support and love.
Yeah, I think it's hard on them sometimes, though, because we do work so much, you know, but I think we find a way to balance that. You know, Casey and I are pretty good at finding the time to shut down, and right now, after this book cycle, it's shutdown time for Dave for a little while, so I can just, you know, get Danielle back to college and spend some time with Jackson. But we always make family a priority. That's just how we both are.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and being here together, the team. For this book, anything in closing that we want to make sure we leave with the listeners in regards to this book?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, the book is going to be adapted into a feature film. It already is. We're working with the screenwriters that we worked with Patriots Day, Finest Hours, and now we're in the process of interviewing potential candidates to play Tom Brady.
I actually seen pitches. I thought it was interesting.
Which is a very tall task, literally and figuratively. People keep asking Dave and I are mentioning the words, you know, Mark Wahlberg and Matt Damon to us, and we laugh because Tom Brady's 6'5". He's from Northern California. Damon and Wahlberg are great actors, but we need somebody that can pull off the masculinity of the role, but also the mental capacity to it as well.
And they don't. And he doesn't have to be a Boston guy for this one. You know what I mean?
Well, Tom Brady's not a Boston guy, right?
Right, right.
Well, I was going to throw out there.
Please,
call me crazy, guys. Why not ask Tom himself? I say that because look at Eminem, right? Eminem played himself, right? Howard Stern. Right? Played himself.
It's not a bad idea.
Just throwing it out there.
You know what? It depends on when we go into production. If he's no longer playing, he might, you know, jump at that challenge. Tom Brady is certainly one guy that we see will, you know, if you tell him to go right, he's going to go left, and he's going to make left the best possible decision he's ever made. So you never know. We'd love to have him, you know, involved in the project any way he wants to be.
Website in regards whether for production company or for the book purposes?
Sure. Dave and I have a production company called Fort Point Media, which we just...
Excellent name.
Thank you very much. That's where our office is, and we just sold our first property, which is a book called Animal that I wrote a few years ago about Joe the Animal Barboza. 20th Century Fox is going to be putting that into production very soon. Dave and I are working on Ice Bucket Challenge together, so I'm going to give my Twitter handle, which is CaseySherman123. Dave, you want to do it?
Just at Dave Wedge. Simple.
And we didn't get to talk any hockey yet. I mean, we're on the cusp of it, but eventually I got to get you in here. Dave, I got to say, always been great. So you've kind of a holdover from the Bob Hedlund years.
Yeah, Monday Night Talk, it was a lot of fun. I did it with Mayor Hedlund for many years.
It's still a lot of fun.
It's still a lot of fun.
I think it's more fun now.
Well, we were talking today. It's great. I think it's great what WATD is doing, and I saw that you guys now are broadcasting on MEX. I think that's fantastic. So it's great. It's a great resource for the community, and I'm glad you guys are doing your thing.
Get out there. Get the book about Tom Brady, 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. Your authors, Dave Wedge, Casey Sherman. Guys, thank you so much. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Ed Perry, and I founded WATD 40 years ago. WATD is so proud to partner with Plymouth 400. This is a once-in-a-century opportunity to really get people to come and visit the South Shore of Massachusetts. It isn't just marketing the Plymouth area. It's giving people all over the country the opportunity to be part of a celebration that really makes everyone proud to be an American. And that's why the Plymouth 400 is so important, is that people feel good about this celebration. It's unique. To get all of the benefits that you will get as a business partnering with Plymouth 400, I think this celebration is probably one of the most important things that we will be doing on the South Shore to remember the history of our country and where it came from and where it's going. Visit Plymouth400Inc.org.
Paul from Marshfield about his experience with Budget Blinds.
Hi, I'm Paul from Marshfield. I'm a customer of Bob Smaldone from Budget Blinds. I have a house with a big sunroom on the second floor. I love the view, but in the morning when I'm trying to sleep, I don't like all the light that comes in from the east. I used to have to pull down 12 separate shades to block out the sun, and even then, the light crept in from around the shades, and I put up with that for years until I met Bob Smaldone from Budget Blinds. He designed a system specifically for this sunroom that lowers a beautiful blind that blocks out the light, and they fit right in. When they're up, you hardly even notice that they're there. They magically go right up and disappear right into the frame of the window. I can't say enough about what a great job Bob does with his installation and his crew from Budget Blinds.
Make your business more energy efficient, more pleasing to the eye, and get that glare out of your face. Call Bob Smaldone at 781-749-8500 or visit budgetblinds.com.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
We are back for yet another segment of Monday Night Talk. Fantastic having Dave and Casey in. And everything I told you in regards to, or as I explained with, when those guys were here, I love local flavor, local talent, guys like Casey and Dave, and also taking in their product, taking in, I should call it a product, but taking in what they've crafted, stories that they've written, stuff that they've investigated, get the background. If you get a chance, I can't wait to go and get the book, whether it's a Kindle version or audio. I'm kind of really big on the audiobooks these days, but I mix and match, as I was telling Casey. I have the hard copy, but the audio, like if I'm at work and I'm you know, doing stuff, it's on in the background. Like I said, I'm up to, so it's 40 chapters of Above and Beyond, and I'm up to 15. Now, next pair that I have who are going to be joining me up first, we have my good friend Chris DiOrio. Chris, been here for legal discussions in the past. I didn't disappoint you. I do have what you gave me. It's here. You are.
I hope you have it every day. That's the idea.
Oh, it's in front of me. It sits on my desk.
That's the idea.
It's on my desk. Listen, you know, you visit there from time to time, at least once a month. Sure. Feel free. Walk into my office. It'll be right there.
Excellent.
If I need something, pull it.
Excellent.
Chris is here to kind of talk. He started recently. No, well, I shouldn't say recently. How long ago was this?
2 months ago.
2 months ago. That's kind of recent.
Yep.
Made an announcement that he was going to go on a mission. going to go to Uganda. Now, the only thing I know about it, Uganda, is I'm a wrestling fan. And when they used to have the Ugandan
Kamala
giant.
Kamala the Ugandan giant.
Kamala. And, and that's as far as I know.
Yeah.
But Chris is going for an excellent reason. He's going to sit here. He's going to talk with us about today. And then as kind of an extra in on Nubi Ritoz. I know he's rolling his eyes at me in the back of the room. You're going to hear talk a little bit about his participation in Nubi's project. As Nubi's going to talk to us about a fundraiser that he's going to be having at Joe Angelo's coming later this month. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but we're going to get right down with Chris. And Chris is a guy, you know, I've kind of turned off social media these days because sometimes we go on social media, this political back and forth, and the one side is going, rawr, and then the other side's going, rawr, and I'm like going, I don't want, see, I'm, while I talk to people who have a political position, who serve in certain capacities, whether they're a selectman, whether they're a state rep, they're the governor, I'm not immersed into their politics. I'm not there to march. But Chris is the kind of guy who, when he posts something on social media, there's a lot of thought and there's a lot of depth to it. And there's a purpose to it. And he's decided that he, for a couple of different reasons, is going to be going to Uganda for 6 weeks.
Correct. Yep.
And he actually has a GoFundMe page.
Correct.
And I think as of probably 2-3 hours ago, he's at $4,400.
Correct.
I know that for a fact.
Yep. I'm 100 shy of my
100
initial goal.
But, 100.
You know, and we'll expand beyond that, obviously. But that's the I'm hopeful anyway.
95%.
That we're there. So it's the mission itself is one that hit me a few months ago. You find things in your life, and I think everybody, if they're blessed enough to have this, knows that they're called to do something, that they have a certain set of skills, a certain set of abilities, and a desire to do something, and then there's a need. And I've been dealing with civil rights here in the United States for a long time as a defense attorney and as an educator, but when I read about and heard about what was going on in the country of Uganda, and it's not unique to Uganda, but Uganda is one of the touchstone parts of Africa right now, sub-Saharan Africa, that is in dire need of someone with my skill set, with, you know, the desire to go in and help folks address human rights issues, civil rights issues, especially with women and the LGBTQIA community, and this seemed to be a good match. So off I go.
And you actually mention in your human rights mission that actually there's a local politician who's running for governor who actually helped craft something if, in fact, the person is an LGBTQ person.
When people think of African countries, one of the I guess, a biased way of looking at it is you presume that they're Muslim countries. Uganda is decidedly not, and a great many countries in Africa are not. Uganda is a majority Christian country, but not just garden variety Christianity. They have been influenced greatly by hard evangelical Christianity to the point where up to 2009 and beyond, Pastor Scott Lively, who is running for he's a Republican candidate for governor against incumbent Governor Baker, went to Uganda along with other members of the Family Life Network of pastors and assisted them in crafting what is colloquially known as the Killed Gays Bill, which was signed into law by President Museveni in 2009, in essence allowing for the death penalty for anybody who is discovered to be an out LGBTQ individual. What Pastor Lively then allowed to happen, or assisted in crafting, was an expansion of that law. Not only if you're discovered to be an LGBTQ person, but if you aid, abet, counsel, or console, or otherwise assist an LGBTQ individual. You run the risk of imprisonment, minimum sentence of 7 years, and a possibility of life imprisonment. So I've been advised to mind my mouth, that they take this very seriously. And given the current climate with our own State Department, that there might not be as vigorous an attempt to assist if I were to be found to run afoul of these laws. So this is what keeps my wife waking up every couple of hours at night, and probably will until I'm safe back home on October 28th.
Goodness. So knowing that you have all these odds against you,
yeah,
you're deciding to do this. And I got to say, is this one part I have to read here? And this is what kind of an honorable guy Chris is. I despise is actually in caps, mm-hmm, it's capital, asking for money, but I feel that this cause is a just one and a hands-on use of my abilities to aid an underserved population. The money raised will be used for transportation, room, and board while I'm there, visa expenses, and educational and legal materials for outreach and advocacy.
Correct. A lot of what we have there is with the organization that I'll be working with. They're an established NGO, non-governmental organization, that the organizer, Dr. Livingstone Siwanyana, is associated with the UN as the advisor for democracies in Africa. So it's an established NGO, but that being said, the work that they do is highly scrutinized, especially dealing with women's rights over there, that, you know, they still have bride price, where a woman can be purchased for marriage as young as 5 years old, that you can't deny your husband sexual congress. Rape has to be proven by 4 male witnesses in order for there to be a successful prosecution. They also have an anti-pornography bill, which, again, was written with the help of the good Pastor Lively. But it's not pornography like you'd think about. It does have, you know, restrictions about video and things of that nature. Yeah. But it also says that women cannot wear halter tops, bikini tops, skirts that ride 2 inches or more above the knee, skinny jeans, or any other type of skin-exposing clothing. It's Taliban-esque, but for the fact that it's a Christian organization that's doing it. And women who, you know, women have been stripped in the street by mobs of people for violating the dress code. So we want to go over there. There's an active constitutional push over there to change all of this. And the Constitution has been drafted, not signed by the president, who is now president for life because he imposed upon the parliament to remove the term limits. So he's been president since 1986, and I'm sure there are more than a few presidents here in the United States that wished that we didn't have term limits either. To be determined. but that's a lot of what I'm going to be doing over there. Deals with freedom of speech with political dissidents, with women trying to, you know, that they now don't have to be given away when their husbands die. They don't become part of the estate to go to the brother that survives. That's still the law there. And again, with all the LGBTQ issues, it's hard work. I understand that there's danger involved, but sometimes you have to put service above self, and that's what this is all about.
Now, are you going? I don't think. Are you going over solo, or is there a group that's going over?
There is an existing NGO over there that's already up and running. It's been working since 1993.
So they're going to receive you.
But they will. I am traveling alone. I'll be flying out of Boston in September, laying over in Qatar for a day, and then heading on to Entebbe, and then staying there for 43 days, and then heading home. So a relatively short amount of time, but there's a lot to be done, so we want to get started and hit the ground running.
What would make for a successful mission other than you being back here in the United States at the end of October?
Well, that is, in fact, the success that my wife is looking for, and I'm sure my daughter, who's in the other room, and my two sons. But what I'm looking for here is the same thing that I look for in any classroom, the same thing I look for in any courtroom. I need to look over at one of my clients and see them smiling when the day is done. If I can go over there and turn on the light for one person, so that they realize that they are not property, that they are not to be chattelized, that they are not to be put down or treated as less than human, that they can, when I leave or while I'm there, stand for themselves and recognize that human rights belong to everybody who lives and breathes and walks on 2 feet. And even those who do not and who roll on 2 wheels or however they do it, if you are breathing and living as a human being, your rights are the same. And that's what they need to know. And that's what I want to come out of there with.
Folks want to find out more. You have a website, or are you just strictly going with the GoFundMe?
I'm going through the GoFundMe. If you look up Chris's Uganda mission on GoFundMe, that's fine. You can also, you know, friend me on Facebook. It's Chris DiOrio, D as in David, I-O-R-I-O, and I'll be happy to let you on board. And but most of my posts related to this mission are, in fact, public, so you don't necessarily need to be my friend and read all of my clatter. But you can just come in and find me there. And if you, I know that if you Google this, you can also find it as well.
If I can, if I may, GoFundMe.com/Chris039 dash Ugandan dash human dash rights dash mission. That's the GoFundMe page.
That's it.
With a picture of Chris and his daughter.
Yep.
There. And, God bless you.
And
when I introduced, he's also the dad, I think the individual who oversees Dom's Dimes.
I am the director of Dom's Dimes, and we've been here on multiple occasions talking about my son's charitable work with the homeless in the Plymouth County area.
So as you see, this is the nature of this individual, and is, please, if you will, if not only donate but also pray that there is some semblance of success. And speaking of success, that's my segue to bring Mr. Newbie Rateau to the table. He's very slow, wearing his... Who is that individual you're wearing?
Oh, you got to know who that is.
I know who it is. I want him to
you
say...
You tell me, Kevin. You're the sports guy.
You know what? He should be in the NFL right now.
I agree. I think the Cleveland Browns should have him.
You really think so?
I think I could start for the Cleveland Browns and give them a good
He's
run.
Wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey.
Yep.
Excellent. Newbie is here to talk to us about, first, how did you come to meet Chris? Well, you actually set up through a mutual friend. It's almost like theater. It's got that bond.
Small world.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Shayna Barnes, good friend of mine.
You've been on the show.
She's been on the show probably a bunch of times, and she connected us. We're looking for someone who really could give a legal perspective on the police situation going on throughout the whole country and understanding the different processes. So we said, we can get someone with an opinion, but I want to make sure that we get someone that actually really knows what they're talking about, really knows the letter of the law. And
boom,
you know, Shannon said Chris would be awesome. Myself and Will interview Chris, it went dynamite. And he's now part of the Forever New Production fraternity of documentaries.
And interesting enough, one of the segments that Chris, other than having his son Dom on, was we were talking about a police incident, if in fact you're pulled over, and what your rights are and what you should do. So it's, you have the man right there.
Yeah, I mean, this dynamite. Just real quickly, the reason why I'm wearing this Colin Kaepernick shirt right now is obviously I'm doing a document on policing. And I just felt like I wanted to wear the shirt just to prove the point that, you know, a lot of times the kneeling issue is being brought up many times by the press, by the president, by the players. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was important to kind of regenerate the issues was over police brutality of honoring black men. It wasn't about patriotism, which is being turned to that now. But I the document is focused on police and minority relations. And I just feel like that the kneeling situation is kind of turned to something it wasn't originally set for. And that's what originally was for.
Talk to us, Chris, if you will, for a second, kind of chime in on being able to offer your insight in this area.
Well, as I understood it from talking to Newbie about the documentary, is they are looking to understand why it is that in a great many of these circumstances where law enforcement is involved shootings or in violence regarding unarmed individuals or you know, street crime. What happens when these cases go into the grand jury and they don't come out with indictments? A lot of the anger, a lot of the distress is directed at law enforcement when this happens. And part of the issue was trying to understand what happens in the grand jury. How does it work? How is it comprised? What types of information is a grand jury getting? And so those are the questions that were posed to me, and those are the answers that I gave. So we want to let people know that it's not just necessarily a law enforcement issue, but potentially a systemic governmental issue as well when it comes to prosecutorial discretion in presenting these cases to the grand jury.
Newby is not a stranger to going out and doing a film on some of the tough questions, whether it's sports, whether it's about fatherhood, whether it's about guns. No stranger to it.
No, I think these are issues that need to be addressed. And to be quite frank with you, I mean, I think this issue, every document that we've done, I think has served a purpose. Yep. Fatherhood, to me personally, I think is part of the most important. I thought it was a foundation, you know, having a father in the household. This documentary right here, I truly believe, and part of my heart, is going to save some lives. It's going to save some lives. We have detectives. We have the new police commissioner on the film, Chief Gross. Congratulations to him. He just got officially sworn in today, this morning. We have some real, you know, people in the business of policing, as well in law, as well as people who have been affected, that are really going to tell some things about how to save your life if you are interacting with a police officer, which I think is so important.
You got an upcoming event, the 27th of Monday, which means you probably won't be able to listen to the show because your event's from 6 to 9 p.m. at Joey Angelo's, and you're inviting people to come by and grab some pizza and refreshments. And this is going to be your final fundraiser. Now, I'm going to say right now, I'm very disappointed because I was looking forward to having the MVP in studio. And now you're an MVP. But I was looking for Will, the MVP, to be here. And you know, if it wasn't for this fine bracelet that Chris's daughter made for me, I would be really upset right now. But this is the one thing that's making me happy. No.
He did send me a box of tissues to give to you, and I am going to give you that.
That's awesome. That is totally awesome. Talk to me about the team and your motivation, because my understanding is your motivation is that you were robbed of an Emmy. And gosh darn it, you are going to do whatever you have to win that Emmy. And even though you're not in it for the hardware, that's what's pumping through your heart right now. That blood is...
Let me give the order. God's honest truth. Okay, and you can ask Will this. I'm probably one of the most competitive people you ever meet. I'm just a very competitive person. I can't do it in sports, or I'm going to do it in video. But right off the bat, number one, the reason why I'm doing this documentary is we have three people in this documentary who've lost their lives. One person is still alive. I want to do this documentary to save lives. Period. I care less about the money. I care less about the money. We need money to film and to go to these places and lodging and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm not in it to make money. I teach TV production. I do okay. God is good. Okay? So right off the bat, I want to make sure that we are saving lives with this documentary. Having said that, the Emmy Awards, you know, to be acknowledged as one of the best in your craft is a great honor. And something I'm working towards, and we've gotten closer and closer every time. We did Out of Bounds. I think WGBH won. Kudos to them. They did a great job, and they did a better story overall, looking back, than ours. And I think with the amount of resources that we used to this documentary, we traveled around the whole country, from Oakland to Baltimore to New York. I think we got some stories that are going to save lives, and I think... our goal is to win an Emmy Award. That's the goal.
How has it felt speaking with, whether you're talking to citizens, whether you're talking to folks in law enforcement, talking to people like Chris, what's the vibe that you get in different parts of the country as you're talking to people and getting their thoughts on this situation when it comes to law enforcement and everyday citizens and when there is some kind of legal problem?
I think... what we're doing here, what we're focusing on here, particularly with Chief Gross, is how is community policing working here and what could be done here that's not done in the other parts of the country. we're not perfect, but we're not seeing too many of these cases in Massachusetts of the, of this magnitude. Mm. Baltimore, on the other hand, not good. I've talked to mothers over there, particularly Greta Willis, who's the mother of Kevin Cooper, 14-year-old, who was shot and killed, and they have a horrible reputation over there. And the relationship between the between African-Americans and minorities and the police officers is not good. Oakland, the same thing. And a lot of what I'm hearing is that officers who are there are not locals in that area, and the training is not uniform. It's not uniform training for everybody, for the whole country. It's a different training here, different training there. So, you know, one person or another may not have this proper trainer, may not be the most qualified officer to be in that situation. And I want to make this very clear. It's not white police versus black civilians. It's police versus civilians. And I think ultimately there's more in common that police have with the minorities than not in common. At the end of the day, it's one or two bad apples that put a bad reputation on everyone else. Same thing with minorities. And the only difference, as I said, is police officers can take off their uniform at the end of the night, sure, and just be regular people. And minorities can't. But the similarities are so are very similar. And I similar is very similar, obviously. I think that the amount of publicity that these minorities police officers get, 99% of them are great people. I'm trying to highlight that 99% and save that 1%.
Chris, do you have a question? I mean, you're here as a guest, but I know you're also somebody who's you're very thoughtful, and you're usually somebody who's kind of in the know. Is there a question that needs to be asked here while we have Newby here talking about his project?
A question in general, not necessarily for Newby, but if he's having been in multiple jurisdictions to ask about what they're doing in different places, has anyone told you or given you an idea as to what would work? Because we're looking at, you know, the Northeast, we're looking at, you know, the Mid-Atlantic in Maryland, we're looking at California, you've got the situations that occurred in Missouri and Texas, and again, you know, in all of these different jurisdictions, is there one thing or one particular notion that people have that they're coming back to that says, if we could do this, have this, address this, these problems would somehow fall away and become a thing of the past?
One thing I'm hearing, and it's not just one thing, it's multiple things, but a common thing of what I'm hearing is civil service. Let me preface this by saying our veterans deserve the best, going out and really protecting us. But that should not be the only preference to be an officer. For example, you could ask someone who has a veteran's preference and really travel anywhere to become an officer who may not know that community.
Mm. Right.
You know, so listen, the fact of the matter is, if it's a Brockton guy, white or black, in the community, more than likely than not, you probably know someone in that family. The situation may calm down a little more faster as opposed to an outsider. Let's just say, hypothetically, I'm just using an example. An officer from Newton is going to have a very hard time policing a place in Brooklyn. You know, so
I was in Brooklyn this weekend.
Yeah. So in essence, what you're saying is that community policing should be truly community policing.
And right. True community
homegrown
policing,
so to speak.
That perhaps if you're going to be an officer in Brockton, you should either be from Brockton or live in the city.
And now, but here's an issue that big cities go through.
Okay.
That what I'm hearing is that, let's just say, do some places have residency requirements?
Right.
Which is awesome. The hindsight, it's again, double-edged sword. Maybe there's a great officer in Brockton, okay, who didn't score as high as a test on someone in Boston that might be a better fit over there.
Right.
So there's a double-edged sword. But I think ultimately the issue, and Chief Gross says it so many times, is community policing. Community policing. And not just giving out Frisbees and giving out free water bottles.
Sure.
I'm talking about literally, and this is what they did last week. They actually went to Dorchester, Mayor Marty Walton and the commissioner. They went to different businesses, walked through the neighborhood and said, hey, I'm Mayor Marty Walsh. I'm Chief Gross. I'm your law enforcement. If you have an issue, come to me. Be visible. And we're not just giving out Frisbees and free water bottles. That's community policing right there. And I think people get that kind of mixed up sometimes.
I think as far as the residency, and I know Brockton was one that has observed it, and it's been one that's actually been fought, is to be able to have people within the limits, the city limits,
right,
in case there is an emergency,
yeah,
and not have somebody who's living 50 to 100 miles away, yeah, if in case they needed on an emergency for some, yeah, major circumstance.
Sure. When I started as a public defender in New York City, the number of police in all of the precincts that lived outside of the five boroughs, or even in New Jersey, who crossed multiple bridges to get to work, was the vast majority of officers. And, you know, it's the, one of the greatest cities, if not the greatest city in the world, and people can't live there to do the job that is needed to be done in a real community.
So you're also having a fundraiser. So folks can't necessarily make it to your fundraiser at Joe Angelo's on the 27th of August. You also have an online source to be able to have folks donate.
NewbieProductions.com, N-O-U-B-E, Productions.com, and click on Protect Serving Care. During the fundraiser, we're going to release the second trailer, release the official artwork of the film, and also we're going to announce the location and the day of the world premiere, which I'm very excited about. It's a beautiful, beautiful venue. So we're not showing the film on Joe Angelo's. We're announcing when the film is going to happen. I just want to clear up that confusion.
Okay. And how much are you hoping to raise? Which year, do you have a goal?
We're hoping to raise about $2,000 just to cover some lodging costs and applying for different film festivals, so on and so forth. We're about 75% of the document in terms of production-wise. Okay. So this is more for the post-production part for the fundraiser.
And when are you hoping to have the film completed?
Film will be completed, I think, we're about 75% done, I'd say by the end of this month. So by end of August, beginning of Labor Day weekend, it'll be done.
Folks,
Knock on wood.
This might be something else. I don't know.
Whatever.
Wood grain. Yeah. But you heard Chris. You heard Newbie. These are both two stand-up guys with a mission.
Thank you, Kevin, for all you do. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
With a message, and again, whether you're supporting Chris's efforts, not only his 6-week trip, but also his safe return, or Newbie's post-production efforts to get this out there and help educate people. This is what it's about, educating people, which is very important. And you've been listening to a very special Monday night talk. And Chris, Newbie, I want to thank both of you for coming in. Continued success. Hopefully you'll both reach your goals as far as fundraising and we'll be able to talk a little bit about your success, whether it's the premiere or your safe return to tell story. And we'll expect you back in here, Chris.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. And up next, Stand of the Gang, South Shore Live, are on deck. They'll be in just a couple of moments. You have been listening to Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great evening.
South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD-FM Marshfield, WMEX Boston, and 95.9 WATD.com.